This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, I'm wonderful, as usual.
Yeah, well, that, you know, the question is did you survive the storms? It got pretty tricky there for a little while the other day.
It was very tricky the other day. I was really worried because the television station was saying there's a tornado here, there's one over here to the west, there's two coming up from the south, and everybody better be watching it. You don't have very long to take cover. And it was pretty terrifying there for a while. And it, thank goodness, went around. But it hit a lot of towns by us, as you know. A lot of damage, a lot of trees down, a lot of houses. The roofs were gone. Up here north of us, the principal said it took her house off completely.
Jeez.
She said, my house is gone, destroyed. And, I've never seen it where there was 10 tornadoes in Texas at one time. I mean, they were everywhere. They were down by Round Rock. They were by Elgin, Plano, and Carrollton. Then to the west of us, they hit Bowie and Jacksboro. And then they were coming up to Gainesville. And they were just several of them all over the place. And so it was kind of tricky, really. And spring has started with a lot of violent storms. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Don't they say spring comes in like a... Wait, no. It's March comes in like a lion and out like a... Or maybe it comes in...
Out
I don't
like
know,
a lamb, yeah.
Something like that. And it just seems like it's lying like all the time. I don't know what's happening over there. Man.
I don't know either, but it is not like spring. I'm going to tell you something. This week, it was in the 30s every morning.
Jeez. Wow.
So you know that it does not feel like spring. You know, like 34 degrees some mornings, 35, 38. I mean, it is not spring in my opinion.
No.
And if these flowers come out right now, I think they're in trouble. They better wait another week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Maybe two. Flowers probably need to wait 2 weeks. This week, I even saw some tulips blooming. I thought, man, they're not going to make it.
Ooh.
You know, I mean, as cold as it is, I can't imagine tulips already blooming.
Yeah.
Those shouldn't be blooming, I don't think, yet.
I don't think so. It's kind of, tulip season is very, very short, but I don't think it's technically started yet. So, yeah, if they're blooming already, they may be in some trouble, especially if you're, like, in the 30s at night and then, like, in the 70s or 80s in the afternoon. It's like, man, that's pretty extreme. There's not a lot of vegetation that can survive stuff like that.
Well, and next week it's supposed to get better. It's supposed to be actually warm during the day. And we'll wait and see what happens. I hope that, I hope it does get warm. I'm ready.
Man,
I'm always ready, as you know.
Yeah, we're just ready for some nice, warm, calm weather. It's like you have just been nailed with all kinds of bad weather over there in East Texas for like the last several months. It seems like it just keeps going from extreme to extreme to extreme. It's like every so often, or every couple of weeks, you have these massive storms, whether it's ice, or storm, or whatever it is, and now tornadoes. It just doesn't let up. So hopefully once we get to Easter, which is only a couple of weeks away, I think, and then we'll get into some of that warm weather, and we'll kind of set into some nice summertime Texas weather, and it'll be kind of nice. we'll appreciate it.
Well, I believe you, and I'll wait and see it, okay?
Oh, no, don't believe me.
I believe things when I see them, okay?
Wow. Well, everybody's okay, though, right? You're fine. And...
Yes, everybody's okay. It went around us. It was just, really nerve-wracking during that time.
Yeah.
But thank goodness it went around. It went somewhere else, and I was thankful for that.
Yeah, no doubt. Good. Well, glad everybody's okay. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3308. Boy, I'm in trouble this morning. 877-588-3308. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. There's a lot of good things on the website. There's references, tells you what people have made, if it was late, if it was early, what people are making. And that's important. It tells you a lot about the company, which you ought to know. Of course, a lot of people, I've been on the phone with people this week, and they said, we've been listening to you for years. We're now ready. That's always what I hear. People will listen to us for years, and they make the decision to get involved and to make some changes. And I think it's a good time for people to be making these changes, to get involved, in something different than the stock market. I read, online this week, I'm always reading everything I can get my hands on. It said, this could be like 1978.
Oh Lord.
I hope they're wrong about that.
Wow.
Yeah. This one guy said, he thinks it could be that bad. Now, I hope it's not. I hope he's just being foolish, and I hope it doesn't get like that. But a lot of people are really worried, what's going to happen. Gas is up, oil's up. I believe it was $114 this week at one point.
Jeez.
So I don't know. But a lot of people are really giving warning signs about the stock market right now, about the bond market. They're worried about a lot of things right now. So I don't know if they're right or if they're wrong, but it's one guy who's been on a lot of years, and, he's in his 50s, so he's seen all this, and he said he thinks it's going to be like 1978.
When he refers 1978, in what way? Are we talking about like an inflation or like the entire bottom of the economy falling out or what?
Yes. He's saying it could be that bad.
Wow.
He said the stock market could be that bad. I think everybody should be cautious. They should think about it. Even though a lot of people show they made a lot of profit, then I had people come to me this week and say, no, I have not been making any profit. My portfolio is down.
Wow.
So everybody has not made a lot of money. Some people have, but a lot of people tell me that they didn't.
Is that because I know, sometimes, when you say that, people have been listening for a long time and then, they'll procrastinate or they'll think about it. And then they're, for whatever reason, it's still always just kind of like an idea or on their list of things to do. So why now? Is this like the event that's going on right now with inflation, gas prices, like you were talking about? Is that the trigger that's getting people to say, we might need to look for some other alternatives? Is that the factor?
That, and then a lot of people have changed jobs again. And now that they've changed jobs, they don't want to take this 401k over there. They want to bring it over here to us to do an IRA, and I think that's a good thing. And they're, they want to do something different with it. They don't want to leave it like it is. This one particular guy told me where he's at, they're just churning it. Today he said he'll look at it. It's in this. Tomorrow he looks at it and they've got it over here in a different thing. So he's not making any money because they're churning the account. They're switching it in and out of different things every few days.
Wow.
And so he sees the handwriting on the wall. He said, I'm not making money right now. He said, I know what they're doing. I said, yeah, I do too. When he explained it, I said, yes, that's what they're doing. They're just churning the account to make the commission. Because remember, their commissions every time you sell and every time you buy.
So it sounds like probably as they're doing this, they're pretty much just taking their commission because they know that there's not really an opportunity right now. At least probably what the indications are. If they let something set up and kind of take hold, there could be trouble for actual profits coming. So they're just taking their commission because there's not going to be much more.
They're doing their
commission. That's like all there is.
Wow. Man, that's kind of a scary thing.
It is. They tell me about it, and I go, oh, my gosh, I know what they're doing. And he said, I do, too. He said, and they're moving it every few days. And that's stupid. I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
They put it in one stock, and then a week later, oh, no, we need to change it to this one, and so on. And he didn't say who it was, and I didn't ask.
Well, it doesn't seem like there'd be a whole lot of when you move it like that, there's not nothing has a chance to take hold, so you're not going to make any money that way. But they are.
No, it doesn't have time.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do it in a week's time.
Yeah. Wow. It's not a good sign.
It wouldn't be for me, I can tell you that.
No.
I'd be wanting to get out of that quickly.
Wow.
I would know that. But with only them making a commission, you're not going to make anything just them.
No.
And that doesn't sound good to me.
Yeah. What's the general is there an increasing sense of maybe, and panic might not be the right word, urgency maybe to maybe make some different choices, or do people really? I mean, like people are they getting nervous? I guess is where I'm going with this. Is there a general nervousness?
Yeah, I think they are nervous. Several people have told me that. One guy I talked to that owns an oil company, he said his investors have stopped investing with him.
Really?
Yeah, he came in the office this week and he said, "Babe, my investors have quit investing with me because they're worried." And I never had thought about that. If you're in the oil and gas business, I would think the investors, you know, would be right with you. But he said no. He said his investors are not investing right now because they are worried. They don't know what's going to happen to the oil and gas business, so they have stopped investing with him.
Wow. Has that ever happened? Do you recall that ever happening before?
Well, if it has, nobody told me about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wasn't privileged to it, so I don't know. But I know that he said that they are not investing with him all of a sudden. So that puts him in a bind because that's where he gets his money, you know, to drill. It's from his investors.
You know,
I don't know who they are.
We've talked before that there are certain indicators that will happen, and people will sometimes go into maybe not panic mode, but you know they'll kind of start pulling back a little bit, maybe getting a little bit more conservative. The things that are going on now, though, do you think this is above and beyond the normal sense of pulling back that people would normally would do because of the situation?
Yes, it is because of the deal in Ukraine and Russia. People, you know, are thinking about different things than they would have been a month or two ago. So it is affecting a lot of people. You know, the price of oil is going to affect everybody in the country because food is going up. I've seen a lot of food going up. The farmers are now saying their fertilizer is out of sight. And so, you know, their prices are going up. And so everybody's price is going up. So people like farmers are worried, you know, how they're going to make money this year if they're having to pay so much for fertilizer and different things, you know, to make a living.
Man, it's just a big domino effect.
And they may not buy those new tractors that are self-driving. You know, the new tractor will drive itself. It'll plow by itself. I don't know how that's going to work. I'm anxious to hear from somebody if it doesn't start plowing the neighbor's field, you know?
Oh,
if it doesn't just keep going and not stop, that's what I'm worried about.
Like one of those little runaway vacuum cleaners, but on a much bigger scale.
That's right. I'm worried about that. You know, everything is going to self-serve, but I think a tractor driving itself is really scary because you've got a huge machine there, and if that thing, something goes wrong, it's just going to go across the neighbors and yeah. everywhere else.
Man.
And I don't know what they cost, but I imagine it is a fortune.
Have you seen, not to get off track, but have you seen those self-driving trucks that are out now? I don't remember which one. I want to say maybe a Silverado or something. I can't remember. But I saw that on TV. I'm like, whoa, that's cool.
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
I've seen all the manufacturers that now have robots doing everything.
Yeah.
You know, the robots just do everything that you need done.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting. It's an interesting time to be alive. Had you thought about that?
I'm starting to. It's starting to really cross my mind.
Well, I mean, look at it. You know, here we are seeing all these wonderful things being made. We've got people still going to the moon. That's old hat.
Yeah.
But robots are new. Things driving themselves, that's new. There's just so many interesting things happening in America.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's almost like there's some really great advancements going on, but people may not be taking advantage of it because of, you know, cost of things or availability, or maybe their concerns are not necessarily about, and this is just for like average people, maybe their concern is not necessarily about, you know, buying the new truck that they wanted to buy. Maybe now it's kind of like, well, you know, we're kind of getting a shift in focus and maybe we don't need to buy that. Maybe we need to, you know, change direction and maybe secure some things a little bit, I guess maybe being conservative might not be the right word, but maybe a change in focus when we would normally be out, you know, getting new gadgets and toys and things like that. Maybe just the interest is kind of starting to shift otherwise. I don't know.
Well, when I go down the highway, I count how many new cars are in front of me. Because, you know, they'll have the paper license plate. Mm-hmm. In the last 2 months, there's been 13 cars in front of me at different times that had new tags.
Really?
Everybody that can buy new cars have been buying them. But now the pickups are being made without all the chips. They say they will add them later. I mean, we've got shortages of chips and everything else right now. So it's going to be interesting to see, like you say, whether people are going to go ahead. Men keep their pickups usually, some of them, to 200,000 miles.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's like a nice new pair of jeans.
That's nothing for a good pickup. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Men love their pickups. They don't want to change, and they don't do it till they have to.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them I know, so I know how long they keep their pickups. If they have a good one, they just keep it.
Yeah. No sense in change. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's right. That's the way they feel. It's comfortable. It's broke in. And they don't want to make a change.
Yeah. And they know where everything is. It's like, you know, when you learn like all the gadgets and the buttons and you know, you don't have to look anymore or like look at the screen and they think, oh, where is that? I knew it was here somewhere. When you learn all that, it's just like it gets really comfortable. No need to change. Wow.
That's right.
Do you see maybe this is aside from maybe they should be connected. Maybe we shouldn't try to separate them. But do you see people buying less, or do you see things like temporarily kind of? This is aside from like availability, because I know that, you know, sometimes you go in the grocery store and there are, you know, large sections of missing something, or shelves are starting to get a little bit thin. Prices are going up, so people are kind of scaling back a little bit. In addition to that, do you think that people are going in a direction of maybe consumer spending habits might go down like permanently? Or do you think this is just a temporary thing?
No,
that will
I think
back?
It's temporary. I think it's a temporary thing. People have always, especially in Texas, you know, people buy what they need. They buy what they want. And I think it's just temporary because everybody's out of so many things. The new cars are not here. People, the used car market is through the roof. Anybody has a used car can make a huge profit. That's all there is to it. They're buying everything. But I think that when things settle down, you know, Texas will go right back like it was.
Yeah.
Because Texas is more profitable. We have more ways to make money than most states. We're not a union state. We're a free state. And that makes a big difference. When you've got all these unions, it ties you down so bad that a lot of the companies, they have a very hard time making a profit because the union is calling the shots. They're telling them what you can and cannot do. But in Texas, we don't have unions like that. Thank the Lord. And, you know, it's a right to work state, and it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
If you don't have unions. I mean, even Starbucks is getting hit by the unions in some of their stores. Can you imagine a unionized store where all they're doing is selling coffee?
Wow. I didn't realize
that. I mean, that's just unheard of.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah. They've hit them in two or three places. They've got three or four different states now that the people are unionized. And it's hurting their bottom line.
Wow.
And it's just because if it's union, remember, and I had this told to me years ago, if it's a union shop, let's say there's a broom on the floor. There's only certain people can pick up the broom and sweep the floor. Someone else cannot do it. There's only one person authorized to do that.
Man.
And, everything is categorized, and you don't do it if it's not your job. It's not like, you know, any of us would help and do something that's not our job. They don't do that. If it's not their job, they don't do it. They leave on time. They're not going to give you any extra time. There's just all kinds of things that I think are bad about unions.
Well, you know, and when you put it like that, it almost kind of like solidifies things, it clarifies things. It almost seems like, you know, unions themselves, even just the basic concept of unions, goes against everything that Texas is about. So I don't, we probably won't go that route anytime soon anyway. So
I don't think so. Texas is a freedom-loving place. Everybody likes to be independent. We like to call our own shots. And if you've got the union over, you've got to pay all those dues. I mean, you may be making more money, but the time you pay your union dues, you haven't.
Yeah. It all kind of washes out.
Yes, it does.
Man. Okay, so as people are kind of like looking at the landscape and we're kind of seeing the things that are going on around the world and kind of see the writing on the wall and kind of like as you lay it out here in a bunch of different industries being affected, as people are looking at other things, are people calling you and are they saying different things now that maybe they didn't say even a year ago or 2 years ago or 5 years ago when they say, you know, Faye, I'm ready. I want to make a change. I want to get into, potentially life settlements. Are they saying different things, or are the words that they say the same but just with a different cause? And by that, I mean, I know people say we haven't made any money, but when they get down to it, it's just like, is it we haven't made any money and we're also worried about that's not going to turn around based on what we see happening? Or where are people, what are they saying?
I think that when they see things going on, they like to make a change. They feel like they need to. They become more conservative, if that's possible. I think it is. When people tell me their story, I can understand why they want to make a change, what it is they need to do, and that's why they come to us. They say, I've been listening to you for years, and now I believe I'm ready. And then we go over it again to make sure this is what they want to do. Then they come over and they sign up with us. And then they say, how many policies can I get in? What is the average I have to put in a policy? I say, it's always up to you. You're calling the shots with us. We're not telling you what to do. We're saying, here's what we think would be a good policy. Here's what we think will work. And then we just tell them the story. And right now, we have five policies that we're bidding on. And all these policies have got a guarantee for 20 and 30 years on premium. And then I've got another one that's guaranteed for 10 years. And the premiums are so low, we've never had this opportunity that I can remember in all the years we've been in business. The premiums are like 500 and something a year.
Oh, wow.
For 20 years, there's one 500 and something for 30 years. And then I've got one that's 1,400 and something, and that's like for 10 years. So they're like 1% of face value. They're very, very low. They're all short term. We've done one that's 12 months. We're doing one that's 18 months. And two of them are liver cancer. And there's no cure for liver cancer. You can look it up. There is no cure. Survival rate is like 4 to 20% for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
So liver cancer is something you're not going to survive. It is incurable. Once it's in your liver, it's in some other places. I know this one guy, they were checking his head and some other places in his body where it had spread. So it has metastasized to several other places, and they gave him 12 months.
Ooh.
And then we have a breast cancer one that looks real good. All these, the premiums are fantastic on. We've never had this opportunity where the, it doesn't matter if it goes over, it ain't going to cost you any more than, you know, a night at the hotel. You know,
yeah.
That's basically what I'm saying. So it's very, very economical. The risk is almost nothing toward premiums. Your premiums are just, well, when it's 500 something a year,
yeah,
it's $35 a month, folks. I mean, that is good.
Yeah.
And these are really great policies. I would recommend these to my mother. I mean, to anybody, because they are good, especially the two liver cancers, the breast cancer. I've got five policies, and I've got people already wanting in them, and I've gotten some calls on them. And I said, well, we don't have them quite put to bed yet, but we're working on it. We hope to have answers on all of these this next week and try to get people in them and make them some money. And, of course, you know, we had the gross policy last week. That was $1 million that matured. We've had over $3 million in the last 2 months, you know, of policies that have matured that have gone back to their banks.
Wait a minute. Just that's worth repeating again. You had $2 million worth of policies that have matured in the last couple months. Is that what you said?
Yes, we had 2.4, and now we're over a little over 3 million that have matured, and we've only got one that's outstanding that's not been paid out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
And the gross policy, the $1 million went, because we just found out last week. But we have asked for the certified death certificate. As soon as it's in, we'll send it to the carrier and get everybody their money. So, you know, we've had a lot of policies that have matured. A lot of people have got, you know, like $100,000+ off the last one. So they've got money in their pockets. So they should be ready to reinvest and make some more money. And that's where we're at on those.
So the takeaway is pretty much that while a lot of people are worried about the economy, worried about, you know, losing money, worried about their portfolio, people who are in life settlements, especially in any of these policies that just matured, they're doing the exact opposite. They're thriving. Is that a good way to put it?
Yes, I think they are thriving. The people that are constant with us, they're making money. They've always made money. As I told you, I had people last week that told me what they made in interest last week. It was $110,000 in profit.
Wow.
And that's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know, if you can make that much in a year's time, you're not hurting at all.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's a classic deal. It's different than any other investment. It's conservative. Nobody's going to make you rich, but we will turn your money. We will get you money for retirement. And if you've already retired, we're trying to keep it up, to keep your interest up for you.
For those kinds of numbers, like when you were talking about the people who are you know, making the interest that they're making, what does that kind of a scenario look like? Is somebody like that, generally speaking, are we talking about, you know, like five policies at a time or 10, 20? What would they be in to turn a profit like that? What would that look like?
They have over 20 policies.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah. Cool. They we're talking about our big investors. They have 20 to 30 policies. And on a yearly basis, they probably add, probably $1 million
oh,
to
geez.
Their portfolios.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
We have people that add $1 million. Last year, I had two or three brought an extra $1 million to the table because they wanted more policies than they already had.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's what we did.
They were doing well and just wanted to do much more of the same and magnify that.
That's right. Because we looked at a lot of investments for them, different things. And when it came back to it, they said, no, you know, we need something a little faster. We need the portfolio like we have. That's what they said. That's what we want. We're not even going to do annuities. This one person was going to do some annuities and came back and said, no, I think I'll just put an extra million in to life settlements.
Wow.
And that's what we did. And so that's how I know what people are making. I know what they're investing. I know about the safety of a life settlement. You know, it's a life insurance policy. Everybody forgets that. When you're investing in a life insurance policy. It's that simple. It doesn't have the risk of some other investments. It's not like on a day-to-day basis it can go up or down or sideways or that you can lose everything in one day. It's not that way. It's just slow, steady, and you make the money every time someone passes away. And we're not doing anything but cancer. So that makes it pretty exciting because you know that these are all stage four. You know that they're all on a stage four basis. And sometimes they're wrong. Sometimes, I'm not going to tell you they're right all the time, but the doctors sometimes get it wrong or the people that bring it to us get it wrong. But we've taken some precaution. We've hired a doctor that works just for us on policies to go back and to read them. And now we're not doing any of them that they don't give me all the backup hospital information. It's taken me longer to read everything. We're doing it. We're reading all the medical before we make a decision. That's why I know on this liver deal and on this other deal, the doctor said it is worsening. And that's the lady that has the cancer in the face and the neck.
Mm.
And yeah. They said it is worsening. So we know that she doesn't have very long because once it gets in your face and they're talking about if they had to replace all the bones in her face, that I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe that she will pass away before that happens. But that's a very good policy that we've got on our radar trying to close. As I said, the ones we've got right now, the premium is like $500-something a year for 30 years and for 20 years. So it takes all the guesswork out. It's taking a lot of the risk out. And so I think people will make some solid money on these because I've read all the medical. I know what they're saying. They're talking about how worse it is. And so we're doing that as a precaution now. We're not going to do any of them that we haven't studied the medical ourselves. You know, lots of times we were letting somebody else study the medical. And we were just believing what they said. Now we've taken it out of their hands. And we're saying we're going to read all the medical ourselves. We're going to make sure this person does have metastatic cancer and that it is non-curable.
Wow.
So we're doing all that as an extra precaution.
So it really sounds like it's almost like you've got not only maybe more data, but you've also got better data and better data analysis so that when you go into
the analysis is going to be better, yes.
Yeah.
The analysis is going to be better. The premiums are going to be better because I'm going to watch that a lot more close, and we're not going to get any surprises. So I think this will be a better situation for everybody.
Wow! So really, you're kicking off 2022 in a really really positive, forward moving position right now. You're in a better position now for better policies than you ever have been before. Is that fair to say?
I believe it is because I think everybody's going to get better results. They're going to be happier with the results. They'll have more maturities.
Sweet. Full steam ahead. I like it. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we take a break and get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
Well, you know, we talk about all the things that Texas makes. We talk about cotton. We talk about cantaloupes. We talk about pecans. We're the biggest producer of a lot of things. But a lot of people don't realize movies is a big product in Texas.
Really?
Did you know the state of Texas every year puts up a lot of money to get movies made here. This year, they're putting up $59 million.
Really?
For movies made in Texas. A couple of years ago, they put up $95
million. Seriously?
So, yes, I'm serious about this. This is another product. It's like cotton or pecans or strawberries or anything else. Movies made in Texas is huge business. So the state every year puts up all this money, and they direct it where the movie companies will do movies in small town across Texas. That's where the money is. It helps these towns. It fills up their motels. It fills up their restaurants, their gas stations. It makes a lot of people a lot of money that a small town wouldn't have without the movies being produced there, because they don't have all this other crops that everybody's got. So this has become a really big business. As I said, this year, the state of Texas will put up $59 million. There has been 400 movies made in Texas.
I'm honestly shocked. I had no idea.
400.
Wow.
20 of the top movies in the world have been made in Texas.
Wow. I did not know.
As you know. Yes. You remember they made Giant. They made Lonesome Dove. The Last Picture Show. North Dallas 40. There's so many made in Texas that people never think about. So then you think about, where were they made? Well, if you remember, Brackettville, Texas was where the Alamo was made. Well, and then you come back, and the people, Larry McMurtry, if you remember him, famous, famous author, when he made Lonesome Dove into a movie, they said, where are we going to film it? They went back to Brackettville, where the Alamo was filmed. They also went to a ranch near Del Rio, Texas. And I don't know what it cost them to use that ranch, but the start of Lonesome Dove was filmed down there by Del Rio. And, So when Larry McMurtry said this, he said, instead of a poor man's inferno filled with violence and faithfulness and betrayal, he said, I'd actually delivered a kind of Gone with the Wind of the West. So, you know, he was thinking it's Gone with the Wind made out here in the West, and especially in West Texas. And if you remember, everybody fell in love with his vivid betrayal of and portrayal of everything of back in the West. It tells a story, if you remember, of two Texas Rangers who headed north of the Rio Grande Valley. They were going to have this cattle drive all the way to Montana, if you remember.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're hunted by Native American warriors and officers of the law. Then they lost the herd. Well, a lot of it was filmed at the Red River. The herds had to be filmed crossing the Red River. So they went to the Red River, did a lot. But a lot of it was filmed right there in Brackettville, Texas, where they had filmed the Alamo. And a lot of it was in ruins. They had to recreate all these buildings. Had to do the town over, but it worked. As you know, it's one of the best films of our century, as far as I can know. And they showed a map, you know, of where the trailhead went. If you remember, it was Captain Woodrow McCall and Gus McCrae, and it was a Hat Creek Cattle Company. And it started in the fictional border town of Lonesome Dove. There is no real Lonesome Dove, Texas.
Yeah.
And so they had to adapt it, look for a location that matched the description. And so Bill Moody's ranch out by Del Rio was the closest thing they could find. So even though the ranch is private, I don't know what they paid him, but it's got prickly pear, it's got mesquite, it's got everything that looked old, that you could, you know, make the environment looked like an old cattle trail out there on that ranch. And then they headed north, and here they were escorting that Lorena Wood, and they were making their way to San Antonio and Austin. And they were gambling and doing all this. Well, of course, they had to have a city and a frontier town So they went to Brackettville, and they reconstructed 19th century San Antonio right there.
Wow. Yes. That's impressive.
It is. And it was reused in the filming of Lonesome Dove. They remade the town again, and they made San Antonio out there in Brackettville, out there on the prairie.
Wow. Man.
Yeah. And so, as you know, north of Austin, the party split off, and they were heading out to find Lorena. She'd been kidnapped by the Comanches, Blue Duck. And so the call and the rest of the cattle, they were going to continue north, and the flats of West Texas and the Texas Panhandle. So they're heading north from Austin. And they had to have a Panhandle ghost town that was the first site of the major conflicts between the settlers and the Indians. So you can imagine how this old town looks. There's a cross on the one church, and the rest of it, the building doesn't even have a roof on it. So it looks authentic to me, the way they did it. So and then they were heading to Fort Worth, and they used the Fort Worth stockyards for part of it. And then they had rows of Western shops and daily cattle drives, and they made it all look authentic, and nobody ever knew all this. And then they went out to Nakona and the Red River and filmed that, which was outstanding, and had all these cattle drives, and they were supposed to have all these moccasins, if you remember, in the river. And then they were going to go across the Arkansas River to Dodge City, Kansas, and Ogallala, Nebraska. So to recreate all this, they had to have all these old towns that they could make look like old prairie towns. And they say that there's been more money made in Texas off of movies than anywhere else.
Wow.
But Texas and New Mexico are the best places to make movies because we don't have unions. And they can hire people and pay them a lot less than they would if they were in Hollywood or some of the places that, a lot of these places, you have to pay them union wages. And in Texas, you don't.
Wow.
Which, again, you can make a lot more money if you're not paying union wages to some 18-year-old out there. Years ago when my son was in college, he was on Dallas several times. And he said they just sat around most of the time, you know, waiting for him to call them to be in the scene. And, of course, the movie stars never talk to the extras or the underlings. You know, they go to their trailer and they stay in there where they can look real up above everybody, you know. but it's amazing to me the streets of Dallas that we've made so many movies on. And when Dallas was filmed here, if you remember, they all took houses here during the season when they were filming. Larry Hagman, all these other people, they rented houses for the time they were here. They spent a lot of money. The economy grows every time we make a movie in Texas. And they've been making a movie down here at Granbury. You know, Tim McGraw's in that movie. Last time I was in Granbury, everything was full. The motels were full. They said, Faye, we've been full for 3 months while they're filming this movie. It's a Western again.
Wow, really?
So, yeah. So our economy, movies are a big part of our economy in Texas. Every time they make a movie here, especially when they do small towns like Granbury and these other little towns, it really helps them. It props up the economy for months. This is money they wouldn't have if they weren't doing a film there. And the restaurants especially, and then they buy a lot of things. People tell me they come in their shops. They buy a lot of product here. And then the beauty shop. Every time there's a movie being filmed in Texas, the movie stars come up here to get their hair done. And I think I mentioned this before. I saw this gentleman getting his hair cut by my hairdresser, and I asked him about it. Oh, he said he's over here in New Mexico filming, and so he came over here to get his hair done. All the way to Dallas to get a haircut.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of extravagant, you know?
Clearly.
I mean, we think that's a little extravagant, you know? But again, the movies are being made in Texas and New Mexico because of the climate and because we don't charge all this extra. And you can go to a small town and just literally take it over, and they love it because they need the money. So it's as big as an industry, like cotton farming or anything else. It's an industry here.
Man, I did not know that there was like 400 movies made in Texas. I didn't. I could probably name a couple, but man, I didn't know there was that. There was that many. It was that big of a business. Like when you go to when they recreate things on like Brackettville, are the stuff still there? Like, can you go see it, or did they tear it all down?
Yes. I have been there before, and I rode in Stagecoach, and I don't know if you can still do that. That's probably all gone. But they've used that move, that Brackettville, over and over again. When I was out in Arizona several years ago, I went through a movie set that they had left, and had it had all the storefronts. It had the bar, the saloon, all that was still there, and you could go and see it. And I read the other day that a lot of the ranches that they made movies on, they left all that. So they've gone back and used those movie sets over and over again. So as long as the buildings are still standing, they'll go back to these towns and make a movie over and over again. And it's that way here in Texas. A lot of the places they've made movies, they've went back and used it over and over. Like when they made Giant, a lot of that stood for a long time.
Man, that is really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so, and years ago when I, the people, the Thornberries out in Pampa, Texas, when they were making HUD on the and they used their ranch and everything on it and paid them a lot of money handsomely to use their ranch for that movie HUD. And so it props up the communities where they make all these movies. And they've made, as I said, 400 movies. The top 20 movies in the United States were made in Texas.
That's amazing. I feel a weekend trip coming just to see the stuff that they left behind. I think that would be really,
yeah,
really cool.
It is. And each time they just leave the stuff. They do not tear it down or anything else. And a lot of it is deteriorated, and they have to prop it back up, you know, where they can do it. But it works.
Wow. Did you also say in there, or did I hear you wrong, that your son was in Dallas?
Dallas, uh-huh. Yes, he was in Dallas, him and some other college kids. He thought it would be great to do this while he was in college, and he signed up with a theatrical agency that represented him. And if you have an agency representing you, they will put you in different movies.
Really?
Even kids are, lots of times young kids sign up with a theatrical agency. They represent them. And when there's a call for a child, they'll call the casting agents and say, do you have in your portfolio a child 8 years old that could be in this movie? They'll say, we'll send you some out. And a lot of people don't know that. You sign up with the talent agents, and then they'll put you in different movies.
What did he do? I assume he was an extra, but what?
He was an extra. I can't even remember what scenes he was in Dallas. I think it was at a park. I think they were in a park scene and several things like that. And they got paid like $500 a day.
Really?
Yeah, these kids got, I believe it was $500 a day that they got. And when they weren't filming, they went and sat under the trees, did things like that. And he said it got boring because they weren't asked to do anything, you know. And then when they'd come back and say, okay, we're going to shoot this scene, they'd bring them back on.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I'm shocked. I'm also shocked that you just threw that out there at random.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hadn't even thought about it for years that he had been in that.
Wow.
And, yeah, and then I had another friend, and I'm trying to think of the name of the movie. it was made downtown Dallas, and I went down and watched them film it. And they asked Dan to be in that one. He said, no, I've got some studying I've got to do. I don't want to do it. I couldn't even believe it. I believe it was RoboCop. Yeah, RoboCop.
Really?
That they made downtown Dallas. Yeah, RoboCop. And they called him that day, and I asked him, I said, well, Dan, what'd you say? He said, I told him, I've got studying to do. I've got a test tomorrow. I can't do it. Oh, my gosh. You know how kids are. Yeah. It wasn't important to him. He wasn't impressed because, you know, he was an extra. You know, they just stood around and did things they were told to do. But, RoboCop, when they made it downtown Dallas, they called him. They needed some extras that day. And he just didn't go. He said, no, it's not that important. I've got studying to do.
I'm literally speechless. Not only am I speechless because I guess I didn't realize they made RoboCop in downtown Dallas, but then he had a chance to be in as an extra and turn it down to do some studying. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, it wasn't important. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize that all your extras, most of them anyway, are signed up with a theatrical agency. And that makes it easy when they need extras. They just call the theatrical agency and say, I need this many extras for this film today. I need men or women or children, you know, whatever. And this is how most actresses started out. They signed with an agency. I was thinking about Morgan Fairchild a while ago. She was signed when she was 8 or 9 years old, her and her sister. And first they were in, like, dance routines and things. They would call them for that. And then, she got casting calls, and somebody discovered her, and then she went to Hollywood. And her sister was an actress also. Morgan Fairchild grew up in Dallas. But her mother signed her with a theatrical agency. And most of these people, if you're signed up, you know, with a theatrical agency, you're going to get a lot of chances to do something. And if you're an extra and they discover you, you know, you can become a star.
Man, you really need to start documenting all the things that you know, the experiences that you've had, the different circles that you've dipped your toes in. It's like, what? It's just, you're full of amazing stories. Wow, I had no idea any of that had ever even happened. Wow.
And I forgot about it until we started talking, and it came back to me all of a sudden. I go, oh, yeah, I know about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez.
And you forget over the years what you know.
Wow. That is really, really cool. That's very interesting. I definitely see some weekend road trips coming up, especially to like Brackettville and all these other places. I think it'd be really cool to see some of this these things. And you actually went, you said it was in New Mexico, where you actually went to an old movie set and took a stagecoach ride?
No, that was in Brackettville.
Oh, was it?
I went to Brackettville. This is years ago. So I don't even know what's left there now.
Yeah.
There may not be anything except prairie. But when I went, they were still talking about, the Alamo. They were still talking about the other movies that have been made there. And you could go, and they had a stagecoach, different things. And you could get the feel of what it was like back then because you could ride the stagecoach. And back then, you could do a lot of things like that. I don't know what Brackettville is like now. How much has been preserved or how much has gone back to dust, I do not know. We need to go back to Brackettville, check it out, and see. But as I said, they're making a lot of movies in Texas. It's big business. It's as big as all the other businesses because it adds to the economy. That's why the state sets aside, and I didn't know the state was putting that kind of money out,
yeah.
$59 million.
Yeah.
For
and
movies.
What'd you say? Previously, it had been like 90 something million. It's
yes, 95 million. So, and then some of the politicians want to kick it out. They don't want us helping the movie industry here. And that's crazy. If it adds this much to the economy, they wouldn't be spending that much money unless it was really helping.
No doubt. Wow. I think we should start changing the name of the show to The Adventures of Faye Bagby. That'll be the Sunday morning show.
Hey, I have been around a day or two.
I know it. Man, you're full of interesting stuff. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Before we wrap up the show, we do need to get into the risks of life settlements. I know we kind of touched on a few things, you know, people wanting to take less risks than what they might be used to and what they might be facing right now with like the stock market and things like that. But there are some risks involved with the life settlement, but relatively speaking, I would say compared to other options, they're pretty small. So what's the biggest one?
The biggest risk of all is it could go over. You could have to pay premiums. Always know what your premiums are. Going in, it shows what the premiums are going to be. Make sure that they're guaranteed for a while, like 10 years at one rate. And right now we've got some that are guaranteed for 10 and 20 and 30, which is the best it's ever been. So the risk is you could have to pay premium. Know what that premium is going in where it won't be a surprise. That's your biggest risk is the premiums if it goes over. The second risk is it's not liquid till it matures. Remember that. It is not liquid till it matures. And then the third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under, and they are getting bigger and bigger all the time. They're, like the one we deal with, is $50 billion, and I kept saying 50. They're now worth $62 billion. So they're worth billions and billions. They're the safest they've ever been.
Wow. And people should also know, we probably know in the back of our heads, but for people who are thinking about, you know, making a change, or maybe somebody who might be your call this coming week that says, you know, Faye, I've been listening to you, I'm ready to make a change. One big thing that they should know is that regardless of whatever happens in the economy, so if the stock market crashed on Monday morning, or if, you know, something happens overseas with Ukraine and Russia or North Korea, or whatever happens, a life settlement is its own thing, and nothing can affect it because it is being paid out by a life insurance company, right?
That's right. And it's not us paying. You don't have to rely on us. Our people at Nevada Trust are the trustees, and they do the payments. So that's why it's safe, because we've taken every precaution. We never touch your money. It goes directly to Nevada Trust. They get the certified death certificate. They do the payout and put it in your account. It always goes from the trustee right into your account. That's the way it ought to be.
Okay. And at the beginning of the show, you said that you had quite a few people this past week call you up and want to come over, become new investors. I know you've had the last several weeks has been pretty active for you. Going forward, is there, quote, room for more new investors if people wanted to come on board?
Yes, there is. For all these new policies, yes, we will have room for new investors in these new policies. But we haven't covered, you must be accredited. You must make either $200,000 or you must be worth $1 million without your home. Remember that. And the minimum investment is $100,000.
Good point.
We need to always tell them that.
Good point. Okay, so for getting started, people do need to call you and make an appointment. So I assume you've got some availability this coming week. Yes?
That's right. We're always open to try to help people. If they call us and talk to us, we'll tell them everything they need to know. We'll go over it. If it's something they like, we'll do it.
Good deal. And one last time, Faye, for people to call and get started, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.